Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. Today, I'm excited to welcome Deborah Trudeau, VP Licensing and International Business at Trudeau Corporation and Global President of the prestigious International Women's Forum. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. Welcome.
And welcome to our listeners from around the world, including USA, Ireland, UK, and so many more countries. We want our community to grow. So please tell your friends and follow us on Instagram. Thanks also to our amazing sponsors, 30% Club Canada, ADGA, and BDC. So Deborah, you have a big role in your family business, VP Licensing and International Business. Trudeau Corporation is a well-known and successful company. It's a Canadian company specializing in the design, manufacturing, and distribution of houseware, kitchenware, and products for children under license. So exciting to be in this big role. And what's it like? What's a day in the life for Deborah in this amazing company?
Well, I guess the best way to put it would be you put on your fireman's outfit every morning because you never know what to expect. You go in with a certain set of goals and objectives, and then you get to the office and you realize, oh my goodness, you've got emails coming from all over the place that lead you down another path. But I think that's business today. And because we've grown internationally, we just have, more international challenges.
Yes. Time zones and
Correct. Doing
business
yes.
in different countries.
Yeah, and just on time. And, we design and manufacture houseware products that we sell to retail for the most part. And so you're kind of the middleman between manufacturers and retail. So there's a little bit of a pinch in between sometimes, and it's juggling a lot of balls. Yeah.
So as you mentioned, you manufacture houseware. So what's a favorite product? What's a Trudeau product that I need to get for my kitchen right now?
Well, we have an assortment of wonderful kitchen products, and it's all about innovation. I would say that no home can be without mills, pepper mills and salt mills. And spices, because, there's a lot of spices that we're coming into, in our cooking these days. But I think every household needs a pepper mill and a salt mill. And I would say our silicone bakeware is also really kind of fun. People are baking more and more, and we're using silicone to help those muffins pop out easily and cakes pop out of there. And it's really a different material that we're not accustomed to seeing, but it's really works so well, and we've just gotten rave reviews. So that would be something that could be added to your kitchen.
And I was going to say a garlic press too. I know you have an amazing
garlic press. Yes, yes, yes.
Or many, but one, yes, I happen to have one of your brand garlic
presses. Good old
presses.
Kitchen gadgets,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So the company began in 1889 in Quebec, and it continues to thrive. This is so exciting for Quebec, but also for Canada, to have a business of your scale and success. How does your company continue to innovate? You gave the example of, innovative products. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. What's kind of the way that innovation happens in Trudeau Corporation?
Well, you're right. It started way back then, and very locally, and we were distributors. And then, at some point in time, when my husband took over the family business in the late 60s, early 70s, we took a look at this distribution arm of it and said, we need to be masters of our own destiny, and we need to create our own product, and with that, create our own brand. And so it was really at that point in time that we decided really to focus on product development and designing our own lines. Which was a big leap forward, a big risk, because up until then we were really distributing the lines of other European manufacturers. And so I guess it really all comes down to being visionary and being risk takers and believing in yourself that, you can do it. And we really start with a white piece of paper, and we just go from there, and we look at to see what's out there. And you do get to know your business and your industry, obviously.
Yes, yes.
So you're always looking at ways to make things better, mm-hmm. more functional. Innovation is key, but for us, design is key as well. And value. We always love to give a good value proposition to our customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what's it like being in business with family?
That's the million-dollar question. It has its pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. And I would say that when you're in a family business, it's 24/7. And when you're in your own business, it's usually 24/7. But in family businesses, when you're getting together with your family, you're always slipping back into talking about business because it really is what captures us and what motivates us and what is, you know.
And excites you.
Yeah. And it's what keeps the engines going, yeah. right? So there's that part. And of course, it does pose its challenges too because there's never any real fresh air. You know, you're always talking about the business. But I think the survival for us is that because unusually, Robert, my husband, has three children who started coming into the business and with time. So our survival was to find ways that we could all be doing something in the business that we wouldn't be stepping on each other's toes. I think
very strategic.
Really,
yeah, that's
yeah,
smart.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then it means around Thanksgiving dinner, you can have a pleasant Thanksgiving dinner, right? Because everybody's got their exciting parts of the business.
Park it at the door.
Yeah. And say thanks.
So, and do say
all
thanks.
Right. So
yes,
take
yes.
us back.
Yeah.
What was the 10-year-old Deborah like? What were you into? What kind of, how would you describe yourself?
Well, I guess to put things into context, I'm the eldest of 12 children.
12.
Yes, 12.
The eldest of 12.
Right.
Wow,
yes.
Amazing.
So when I was 10, I was the eldest of six or seven, I guess. Seven or seven was coming along the way. And I was thrown into a leadership role from the very beginning, right? It's mm-hmm. all that I knew. And but it really does bring a smile to my face because looking back, I had a happy home life. And even though I was really in charge of so much. I had a lot of responsibility, you know, mm-hmm. growing up in my life. And I think that I would almost say that my mother and I partnered in this together. I'm going to take some credit for it along
absolutely.
The way because I did a
you
lot of babysitting and I did a lot of cooking and I did a lot of, you know, chores around the house. So it was really a collaboration. But at the end of the day, it's just, you know, we have this wonderful, strong, closely knit family and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. The 10-year-old in me also, I looked back and I have to say that my parents were very forward thinking because.
How so?
The corner school was a French school and we were an English family. And my mother thought, you know what, never mind. You know, the more languages these kids learn, the better. So off I went to this little French school, being the eldest of the family. I was the first one there and I was the only English child in this French school at the time in Quebec, which, you know, everything was the English studied yes. in English and the French studied in French. But, you know, when you go to a French school in your elementary years, you're all learning your ABCs and 1, 2, 3s at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. So my takeaway from that is that our children from the time they're born, really up into the time they're about 14, were open shells and were just big sponges. And we can learn so much. So whether it be languages or music or sports or science, I would say, you know, challenge your kids as much as possible because it's a big gift that you give them for them to easily, it's nothing. It's so easy for them to learn all mm-hmm. these things at a young age. And they've got a big head start in life. So I have to say thank you to our parents who sent us to French school because we came out of it bilingual and you know, in Canada, in a bilingual country, that's a big plus. But I think when you're traveling the world to have a second language and even a third language, it's a real plus. So it opens your horizons.
Yes. And just thinking about the kind of responsibility that you had at 10.
Well, I didn't think about it then, but when I think back on it, but of course, when I think back on my mother having 12 kids, I wonder how she did it. So,
right. Well, she had help. You.
Yeah. Here you go.
And then who's next?
A boy.
A boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
is everybody still in Canada? And
well, we're divided into three places, Montreal, Toronto, and Florida.
Okay.
And there are 7 boys and 5 girls, but the last 2 are girls. And throughout growing up, you know, I have to giggle at this because when there were issues to be decided, the boys would rally and they'd just say, well, you know, ask the government. And the government was the girls.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So they knew. They knew out of the gate that, you know what, ask the government and they'll decide what we're doing.
And so it went.
And so it went. There you go. Yeah.
That's a beautiful story. Yeah. So obviously it shaped you considerably, having that leadership and having all of that responsibility. Mm-hmm. What's the last thing you've done, Deborah, that scared you?
I think the word scared is scary.
Let me say it differently then.
Yeah.
How about, because this is the Fearless Women podcast.
Right,
so
right. We shouldn't be scared,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we shouldn't be scared. So, you know, if we think about being fearless and, you know, taking on those big, bold challenges. So what's something that's you've had to at least muster the courage for late?
Yeah. I think that's what life is all about, right? Just always propelling ourselves forward and taking risks and getting out of our comfort zone, right? So I would say that, you know, looking at being bold and courageous is something that I would always say to future leaders if I'm mentoring, to be bold and courageous and to, you know, get out of their comfort zone. So I guess we have to practice what we preach. And so the last thing that I've done that would have been bold and courageous is take on the global presidency of an organization that I've been part of for a number of years called International Women's Forum. Mm-hmm. And I've had a number of leadership roles in the organization, from the president of Montreal chapter to the president of the Canadian chapter.
That's when I first met you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then I was on the global board for a number of years and just recently accepted the appointment of being the global president. So I would say that was probably, something that pushed me to get out of my comfort zone. And because I knew that I'd have to step up. Yes. step up. In an organization that's global, 7,000 fearless other women leaders. And so therefore I thought, okay, you know what? We're never going to be able to please everyone, but let's just go for it. And particularly during these transition times, I think that we're living in a time of transition, and it's not just for businesses, but it is for organizations as well. So it's how to navigate through these transitional times and you know, continue to elevate this organization and lead it into the future.
I think it's very exciting. You're only the second Canadian to lead this important global organization. And for listeners, International Women's Forum, or otherwise shortcut IWF, is an invitation-only membership organization, as you mentioned, of more than 7,000 diverse and exceptionally accomplished women from 33 nations on 6 continents. And of course, we're both members, and I'm thrilled that you're leading the charge globally. And, you know, here you are as a Canadian taking the helm. So why is this the right time to have you as a Canadian leading the charge right now? Why is this important?
I don't think that it was specifically designed for the fact that I'm Canadian, but because I've been an engaged leader with the organization for a number of years. And so I guess I just so happen to be Canadian. And I'm delighted to represent Canada at this stage, really, at this crossroads. And I think that what's interesting is that the organization should have leaders that come from different countries so they can bring their own perspectives and they can bring their own, ideas on culture and whatnot. That's what makes the organization so incredible is the flavor of the international membership. What's interesting about Canada, too, representing Canada in this stage, is that I don't think Canada is not seen with a political agenda. And that's what I like. You know, we kind of come as everyone's cousin.
That's a great way of thinking of it.
And so therefore, there's no sort of a background hidden agenda. We come with really an open mind and the idea that we want to really lead this organization and be true to its mission and vision and see it towards the future. So I think that maybe for me that that takes all those other issues off the table and allows us to have a clear focus on who we are.
Yeah, very exciting time. Why is it so important that we have women leaders, you know, coming together, connecting around the globe through an organization like IWF?
Well, I think you said it before. IWF has got the 7,000 women leaders from around the world. But what makes the organization unique is that these women are really first in their field. They're the top women leaders in not just business, mm-hmm. but in academia, in science, in sport, in government. And so that's what creates that richness and flavor. And women just have a way of connecting. And when you unleash that power and that connectivity of these women together, I think that it's where we can really shine. I say that, you know, one of my favorite things to kind of encapsulate what it's all about is I say it's the three I's. The strength of IWF is the I in international. We're an international organization. There aren't that many women organizations that are truly international. The I also means influence. So together, all these women are influencers locally and globally. And so, you know, we can really, you know, create an impact. And that's the third I. So if we can influence and we can create this impact that can propel future leaders and make positive changes in our society and in the world, you know, that's what we're there for.
I was thinking back, there's been so many amazing conferences that IWF puts on annually. And I was thinking about one time when I was in Morocco and what a beautiful conference that was. And we had that exceptional visit at the palace. And it's just, it's a really right. Remarkable way to bring people together with shared views, but also very different views as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think it, that is one of the aspects. And the conferences are part of the value proposition of the organization and the wonderful programs that we have under the umbrella as well. Programs that will, our leadership programs that we have for future leaders. But then again, the conferences are for our members. And, you know, we talk about, you talk about the advancing women's leadership, and we often look at the outside, you know, how we can inspire young leaders. But there's also from the inside, how we can inspire and lift each other. And I think that's really important, too. So when you bring 7,000 leaders together from around the world, we're all at different stages of our career, mostly, you know, towards the back end of our career. And that's why we can be probably more influential and have that impact. But, you know, I can tell you that there's a lot of women that are also wanting to write next chapters, new chapters of their lives. And they can really stand to lean on each other for advice. And I find that that's the richness of the organization, too. So it's not just what we can do on the outside, but it's what we can do within each other and promote each other and help each other and lift each other. So there's a great value there. And we come together at those conferences
yes.
like you talk about,
yeah,
right?
It's so fun. They're so, yeah. so fun. Yeah. Great yeah. way to see the world. So, Deborah, as a woman entrepreneur, I know we share that passion and interest. So let's talk about it.
Yes, we do share that passion. And I think it's a passion that becomes a drug because it really is so and it's so rewarding in so many ways, right? And you're a serial entrepreneur, so that goes to show you what an addict you are.
Absolutely.
But I guess my entrepreneurial spirit in my corporate life is translating to the reality of today. And I see a lot of young women who have that entrepreneurial spirit. And if you look at what the internet has done, it's opened doors for our younger generation to think very entrepreneurial. And it makes it possible for them to start little businesses through the internet.
The whole world opens up, actually, because of online.
Right. And
absolutely.
Nothing's impossible, right? Mm-hmm. And you can start a little business, but still have your day job and start dibbling and dabbling in something that's not going to be too onerous.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
see
it can take
it
from there, see where it goes, right? So I think that entrepreneurial spirit is something that I would like to cultivate more. And I want to bring that also under the umbrella of IWF, because in IWF, we're always looking at mentoring future leaders. And I think that we should create a space for entrepreneurs so that we can talk their language and answer their needs and mentor them with other entrepreneurs in the organization so that they can they know they're not alone and they can benefit from some advice in our organization. So, yes, entrepreneurship is really important to me. I feel it's something that is becoming more and more accessible to our younger generation. And I want to see how we can be there for them to encourage them and to help them in navigate in that space.
big opportunity. So that's exciting to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's something, because you're talking about advice and leaning on each other, et cetera, what's something that you wish you knew earlier in your career? What's some advice for women listening?
Well, one of the things I always kind of keep tucked away in the back of my head were a couple of things. One thing that comes to mind that I think is really relevant in our world today, because we tend to go so quickly and we live in a very very techie world where everything is going even quicker and we're just behind our emails all the time and our social media is sometimes there's a lot of value in sleeping on a problem and not answering right away. And if it's possible, if you've got a situation where it demands a little bit of thought, it's better not to answer right away and figure you've got the answer. That answer might be a little more clear if you wait it out a bit. And, you know, they say nothing like a good night's sleep to think on something, right? Well, if the opportunity is available, I would say think before you rush to answer. Not everything is a rush. Sometimes it's a rush to just not answer right away on a big issue that can bring maybe a bit more visibility and clarity. Sometimes, you know, I remember, you know, over the years you'd rush to answer that email or that problem thinking that you had the solution at hand, but leave it in your draft for a bit and mull it over, because ultimately 24 hours does bring a lot more and it does temper the answer as well sometimes.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think there's some value to that. And I think that another thing too is taking risk. Because if you don't take a risk, you'll never experience the results of the risk, whether positive or negative. And either way, they're going to be positive, because even the negative is positive. You learn from the negative. So I think that we need to be fearless, you know, which is the name of your podcast, in certain ways, to be risk takers. And you take baby bites. Take baby bites, small steps, and build up that fearlessness. Because what seems so unattainable is often quite possible. And if you don't try, you don't know. So I would say that, you know, nothing's impossible. Give it a shot. And don't be too abrupt. Just kind of sleep on it a bit, too, because
that's so practical.
Some ideas do come and they gel and clarity, you know, does present itself.
And sometimes, too, you know, in terms of, for example, an email when an issue arises, sometimes when you read it, depending on what state you're in,
totally,
you know, you could read it wrong or you read it too fast and then you're ready, as you said, ready to react. And you might have missed the flavor of it or the nuance and you've just created a bigger problem.
Exactly. And I think our world now communicates so much through text and social media and emails. It's a written world, right? And the tone of our voice and the expressions on our face don't come through. And so therefore, the power of the word is everything's resting on the power of the word. And I think that's why we need to reread certain communications before they get sent out, especially the sensitive ones. I'm not talking about, you know, everyday things,
right,
but there are certain issues that can be presented that really, you know, would be best well served if they're reflected through a little bit more. I've always said to everybody at the office, look, if you're talking to your colleagues in the office, please go and show your face once in a while. You can't do everything by email.
Right. Just, you know, get up from the desk.
Exactly. There's so much value to going in and having that that wonderful, you know, face-to-face interaction.
I love that. So final question, Deborah. What is your dream for Canada?
My dream for Canada, just to keep dreaming bigger and better, right? We always have to, I think we've got to make our dreams big. And I think that that's a big question. But my dream for Canada would be to continue, because I think that we're on a track, but to continue to strive for fairness, justness, inclusion, and equality, and parity for women, not just for Canada, but for around the world. And I think that, you know, once we have an equal world, we'll have a more congenial world, a better world. You know, I think those conversations are happening, but I think that the actions have to be stronger. And I think that even though there seems to be a lot of talk, you don't sort of feel it, you know, in the C-suites yet and in boards. And I think there's good, you know, there's some good intentions, but they're not materialized yet. So we need to be, you know, striving to keep pushing those ideas forward and making sure that we, you know, can lead by example too. You know, we want to have a Canada that claims to be and is united, a united Canada too. You know, I sometimes feel that we're getting fragmented provincially, and I'd like to see, you know, us coming together with a Canadian voice and feel more united. And I think that the other thing too that's important is to continue to really work on our early childhood education. Because it comes back to what I was saying before, doesn't it?
Yes.
It comes back to what I was saying before, that our children's minds are so open and they can learn so much, but we need to make it possible for them to learn so much. And we need to put them in the right environment for them to grow and to elevate themselves. And classrooms that are 40, 50 children, and, you know, and different levels, it's making it complicated for those poor teachers today. So we're going to have to rethink how we educate so that we can, so we can help those that are straggling a little bit behind and bring them on. Because if we can help them at that early age, they can catch up, but they can't catch up when it's too late. And it doesn't take long to be too late. So those early years are the most important, to make sure that everybody's on the same playing field, to make sure that everybody is, you know, lined up more or less, you know, to propel, you know, forward together. And we need to pay some attention to, the early childhood education and make sure that we provide good classrooms with, you know, teachers and elevate teachers, because they are so important in our society. And I don't think we give them as much credit as they deserve. I always put teachers and nurses in that same pot, you know? They are so important to our society. So, look, there's a lot. I'm rambling on and I'm saying a lot, but, you know, it all comes back and it all circles around to a better society and a stronger society and a more cohesive society. And I think that Canada is a good role model, you know, in the world today, but we need to keep parenting ourselves to make sure that we stay on track and that we stay focused and that we continue to work in that direction.
That's a beautiful dream for Canada, Deborah.
Hopefully it's not a dream, Janice.
Yes, but it is, right? It is what's possible for Canada. And so thank you for sharing that. It's been an absolute delight to have you here. Your passion for women's leadership and women's economic development is so obvious. And we're so lucky to have you as the global president of International Women's Forum. And also, Deborah Trudeau, you are the VP Licensing and International Business at Trudeau Corporation. Thank you so much for joining us here today on the Fearless Women podcast.
Thank you so much, Janice, for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to the 30% Club Canada for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. The 30% Club believes that gender balance on boards and in senior management not only encourages better leadership and governance, but diversity further contributes to better all-around board performance and ultimately increased corporate performance for both companies and their shareholders. Want to learn more? Visit their website, 30percentclub.org, and select the Canada chapter to find out about membership, supporters, and key resources. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.